This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com. I'm only happy when it rains. I'm only happy when it's complicated. And though I know you can't appreciate it, I'm only happy when it rains.
What is up, everybody? Happy Tuesday. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Networks. Thanks to each and every one of you for what was a lively discussion about if it was your best friend or kid who shot the United Healthcare CEO, would you turn him in? It's a difficult question. Just want to finish that up with some of your last texts and comments. A texter from WLCX saying, there is an answer to this. It is Medicare for all. Bernie Sanders has been talking about it for years. We're the only Western democracy where people have to file bankruptcy because they can't afford their health care. John from Oshkosh saying, it is a tough call. My mom had to ration some of her meds and go without others the last 2 months of the year because insurance companies want more record profits rather than living up to the obligations of someone who has paid for insurance for 50 years. Corporate America is as corrupt as anything. Money is the root of all evil. Thank you all for a great conversation. We'll have more breaking news about Mr. Mangiano at the bottom of the hour, but right now I've got a great guest to help us answer what is a very important question here in the state of Wisconsin, because politicians have been telling us some conflicting things about what our tax burden looks like, and are we actually getting what we think we're getting out of it? My next guest is the executive director of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. His name is Jason Stein. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Jason. I always like to begin with thank you for all the work that the Policy Forum does. We are very blessed in this state to have you all helping us understand the important questions of the day. Help us understand where Wisconsin's tax burden sits in the moment today as compared to other states. And then we'll talk about sort of the backward looking. We'll talk about education funding. We'll get the full picture for people. But help set the stage. Where is our tax burden relative to other states?
Sure. And by tax burden, all we mean is you take all the state and local taxes in Wisconsin that are paid each year, and then you divide it by personal income, so the people's ability to pay those taxes. And what we found when we looked at it was that in the most recent national data on this, Wisconsin's tax burden has now dropped to just below 10%, 9.9%, and we rank nationally 35th. Now well into the bottom states, well below the national average, which is at 11.1%, which is a big change from where we were at a generation ago.
This is always a very interesting question to me, Jason, because one, understanding the relative burdens is important, but it's not the whole story. Has, in fact, Wisconsin's tax burden, if you will, again, the aggregate of all local and state taxes together, has it indeed been trending downwards, or is this a reflection of a national trend where tax burdens are coming down? Which direction is the trend line moving on this here in Wisconsin?
Sure. So there is a national downward trend, but Wisconsin is, our burden is declining more than that. So in the year 2000, our tax burden was at 12.5%, and we ranked third highest nationally at that time. You know, again, in 2022, which is the most recent national data, we have 9.9% in Wisconsin, and we rank 35th. So that's a bigger drop than any other state has seen in its tax burden over that period. So it's, you know, this is very unusual what has happened in our state. And it has also, there have been some trade-offs that have come with this. So if you look at our education funding, you know, we would have been eighth highest in the nation in 2000, and in 2022, we were 31st. So, you know, those two things have moved together, which is not surprising because education is, the K-12 education is the largest single expense at both the state and local level.
To me, fascinating, and it's no accident either, then I could infer, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this explosion of school funding referenda that we've seen across the state, to many of us, it feels like every election cycle, our school district is asking for money, is again a reflection and the predictable result in the fastest overall decline in tax burden in the nation as measured against 2000 as a baseline. Is that a fair inference to draw?
I think that's fair. If you look at our website, and all these reports are available for on our website for free at wispolicyforum.org, you can see we have one recent brief on the tax burden and another one on the November referenda that were on the ballot. And there we found that in 2024, there are going to be 241 school referenda, and that was the most held on record. We've had a very large number of referenda approved in 2024. The approval rate is down a little bit from the last even numbered election year, which is kind of how we compare these things, but still very large dollar amounts. We saw, earlier in the year, very large $252 million referenda in Milwaukee Public Schools. And then later this fall in Madison, we had $100 million operating and more than $500 million capital referenda, which both of those passed. So, very significant ballot initiatives that have come forward this year. And we do also see those on the actual bills that are going out in December. If you look at the gross property tax levies for K-12 school districts, those are going to rise by the most since 2009.
Wow. So we're going to see that on our property tax bills going up the most since 2009. It's a really interesting, I would call it like funding shift, right? From if you can maybe even conceptualize it in this light, that in the past, especially our biggest cities, of course, economic engines, educating a lot of the workforce for the state, a shared funding burden with all Wisconsinites, now very much shifting to a localized funding burden through these referenda. And yet it seems that school districts, it doesn't matter where your district is. I don't know a school district in the state, rural or urban or otherwise, that feels comfortable about their funding level, especially in the post-pandemic environment where student needs are so much more complex and demanding, especially in the mental health and emotional sphere. I wanted to also ask you this, as people assess our tax burdens on a relative basis, and as they look at the decreasing in education funding, what should people expect going into this next biennial budget debate that we're going to see at the state level? Because you already see the sort of teeing off of the issue between DPI Superintendent Jill Underley and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. What can people anticipate? What should we be getting ourselves ready for in terms of the 2025 budget debate?
It's a good question. The state in June 30th of this year closed its fiscal year with a $4.6 billion balance in its main fund, its general fund. And so you're seeing a lot of jockeying among different interest groups for how that money would be divvied up in terms of spending increases or tax cuts. From our perspective, and we put out another recent brief about this, it's important to note that although the state really has a very strong budget, it is possible, because right now the state has a lot in the bank, so to speak, but is spending more than it's taking in actually at this time and in this fiscal year. And so, as we think about ongoing permanent spending increases for education or income tax cuts, some of the things that the two parties have both, jockeyed for, those are going to add up pretty quickly in terms of the amount we have in the state budget. Now, if you look at one-time expenses, like let's say paying for capital projects for the state with cash instead of with debt, there's a lot more room to do those kind of one-time spending measures, or I guess a one-time tax rebate if that was your preference. But the ongoing state budget may be a little bit tighter over the next spring and summer than some people might expect, just given the headlines about these very large state surpluses.
So is it accurate when we hear someone say we've made in the last biennial state budget the single largest investment in public education in a generation? Is that a factually accurate statement from the policy forum's perspective?
I have heard those kinds of statements be made. I have not evaluated that claim, so I don't want to weigh in on it. I will say sometimes those numbers are not adjusted for inflation.
Yes.
And, you know, we have recently had inflation.
A little bit of inflation, yeah.
Year. Yeah, so that's, you know, if you're going to evaluate those claims, you should check and see if they've been adjusted for inflation.
Because if we adjust and understand the trend in education funding over this period of time, say from 2000 to 2022, and you account for inflation, our increases are even smaller because, again, it's not on an absolute dollar basis. Is that fair to say? I don't want to misrepresent the data points here.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the challenges that school districts are having right now is in the 24-25 school year, number one, the federal pandemic aid has run out. So last year was sort of the last year to get that. And then number two, a lot of districts, in particular, the Milwaukee Public Schools are coping with pretty significant enrollment losses. And their funding model is built off the number of students that they have. So, you know, if there's a declining enrollment, you know, over, you know, which is certainly the case for most public school districts since the, you know, pre-pandemic, let's say 2019 to now, that's a real crunch because, you know, they have certain fixed costs, you know, and if they're going to cut those fixed costs by, like, let's say closing a school building or closing a location, that is a difficult conversation to have and not something that you can do overnight if the policymakers choose to do it at all. So those are some of the things that schools are grappling with.
And Jason, if you know, I heard someone mention that we haven't updated our public school funding formula, which is used in quite a long time. Do you know the last time that funding formula was updated or looked at?
Yeah, that's a good question, Maggie. I mean, there are changes that get made around the edges to that. And certainly there's been a lot of changes to school revenue limits that limit the amount of money that school districts in Wisconsin can take in from general school aid and local property taxes. But in terms of the formula used to distribute state general school aids, you know, I've been knocking around the Capitol for 20 years, and I wouldn't say over that period there's been a real major overhaul of that formula.
Yeah, which itself is fascinating given all of the technological changes over this period. When we come back, hey, do you know if you have a lead lateral? Are you in one of the communities with the most lead laterals? We'll discuss that with Jason Stein, Executive Director of the Policy.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Everybody, it's Tuesday and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. My name is Maggie Dawn. I'm an attorney and economist. You can find me here on your local Civic Media talk radio station from 2 to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday, trying to make sense of all the gosh darn noise. And this headline certainly jumped out at me based on my very special guest's work at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. His name is Jason Stein. He's the executive director over there. And Jason, you all dropped a report, I think a couple weeks ago, about the question, the problem, the concern over lead laterals that connect basically municipal water sources to individual homeowners' internal plumbing. Now, everybody in the state of Wisconsin, frankly, has heard about the lead lateral crisis in Milwaukee, but your report certainly made some waves because a couple of other communities, I think were caught somewhat unawares to find themselves at the top of the list for the percentage of lead laterals in their community. Tell us more, Jason.
Sure. And this report actually we put out about a year ago, so it was about November of 2023, but it's been getting some renewed attention because, you know, as it sort of underlines the issue that these things do not go away quickly or even, you know, anything but very, very slowly, let's put it that way. So we looked at data that was available from the state on these lead laterals, which, as you say, are the lines that carry water from the main in the street into your home or into your business or apartment building. And these lines, yeah, we found that, you know, again, there are nearly 100 communities around the state that have lead laterals to some greater or lesser degree. And, you know, in certain communities that were, let's say, built before the Great Depression, you know, built before the 1930s, they can be very common. And even, you know, you see some, you know, you might even have cases where you have communities where more than half of the laterals can be lead. And again, sometimes the data on this, people need to understand, the data is not perfect. I think if people stop and think about it, they say, okay, we got this house. It was built in Whitefish Bay. It was built in Sherwood 100 years ago. How perfect is the data on what the lateral for that house is? Yeah, it's not perfect, right? And I think if people stop and think about it, they wouldn't be surprised about that. But it is an important issue. And you do have some communities like Whitefish Bay and Sherwood that are, you know, well-to-do communities. And people might think, oh, there wouldn't be a problem like that in a community like that. But, it, you know, there are also communities that were built, you know, many of the structures were built a long time ago. And this is just an issue that crops up. And it takes time to resolve. And it also is a tricky financing thing because if you think about that lateral, typically half of it is owned by the municipality, the half that goes part way from the main to the house, and then the other half is owned by the home or the property owner. And so, you know, the city, when they're, let's say they're replacing an old water main in the street or they're doing work on that street and they've got everything torn up, they want to come in and also replace the laterals. But then there is this cost to replacing the homeowner's portion. And it's tricky to just say, well, people would say, okay, well, let's have the water utility pay for it. But where does the water utility get its money from? The water utility gets its money from the ratepayers. And in typical situations, it needs to, if it's expending money that is only for the benefit of one property, it can be tricky for that water utility to spend everyone's ratepayer dollars for that purpose.
It may, in fact, be illegal.
Right. And so, you know, there have been things done at both the state and local level to make it easier to finance both the municipal and the private portions of these lead laterals. But this is an issue that takes, it took us decades to get here, Maggie, and it takes us years to get out of it as well.
As someone that has always been interested in public health and public policy, when these issues first started to come to light over a decade ago in the city of Milwaukee, I remember clocking this and thinking, this is one of those really complicated problems. The city had looked into subsidizing or underwriting loans to homeowners. I mean, it is just, there's the property lines, the whole lateral isn't owned by either the homeowner directly. I mean, there's just so many layers of complexity here. And I do want to just give this PSA to folks. In general, not all cases, unless there is some sort of infrastructural work that has disturbed the lateral, it is not always the case that your water is contaminated at a dangerous level simply because you have a lead lateral. If you think about this, it makes sense. There would have to be some agitation of the lateral that starts, or erosion on the inside that starts to actually sort of result in these microscopic bits of lead entering the water stream. So I don't want people in Whitefish Bay and Shorewood freaking out.
Or a change in the chemistry of the water.
Yes.
Another thing that could lead to that. But yes, I mean, municipal officials who are on top of their game have ways that they can manage this issue and test and make sure that, you know, water is at safe levels. And you can also, even if you don't have a lead lateral, you can still have lead in the fittings of your pipes or your pipes within an older home as well. So, there are multiple things that people have to be aware of. But this is a problem that was kind of long, I think, perceived by some people as a city of Milwaukee problem. But really, any place
in every
Superior, Wausau, what have it, it's a long-standing city, can also have this issue.
You can find all of their work at wis.policyforum.org. He's Jason Stein, the executive director. Thank you so much, Jason. We're all smarter because of you. I appreciate your work. Please do give Rob Henkin my best. We come back. We've got some more breaking news about the Luigi Mangiano issue and arrest that is ongoing. I've got some data from the extradition hearing, some information, the arguments made there. I'm going to share that all with you right on the other side. Keep it locked. My name is Maggie Dawn. I'm your radio lawyer and economist. What I do isn't legal advice, though. Keep it locked.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
We are everyday people, and right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, we, the everyday people, always endeavor to have great conversation. We started off today with a big whopper of a question, which was, would you turn in your son, daughter, or best friend if you had a suspicion that they were the CEO assassin caught on camera last week? Tons of different opinions. Thanks again, y'all. But I wanted to share some more of the breaking details coming out of the extradition hearing. Again, in Pennsylvania today, Mr. Luigi Mangione was in a hearing. And it was very interesting because he actually made statements to the court. I am certain that there was some assigned lawyer there for Mr. Mangione, but I'm pretty surprised that the lawyer let the guy talk at all. I'm also pretty surprised about his outburst going into the courtroom where he seemed to say something about unjust or injustice and then said it's an insult to the intelligence of the American people and their lived experience. But just to refresh our recollections, we covered some of this yesterday, but again, in the extradition hearing today, one of the things that prosecutors will do to make the argument that the defendant here, Mr. Mangione, should be moved from, Pennsylvania, the Altoona, Pennsylvania area, to New York City where the murder occurred, they will review the evidence against the accused. This is one of those reasonableness judgments where these trial court judges have an incredible amount of discretion on whether to grant extradition motions. And usually there is some level of crime that has occurred in the judicial district where the defendant currently is, For example, he may very well be charged in Pennsylvania with some sort of gun crime because they arrested him with a ghost gun. This is one of those guns that you basically assemble at home, and that is illegal. So he may, in fact, get some criminal charges. He was, and I know that he did, was charged with a gun charge in Pennsylvania. And so the trial court judge is looking at the seriousness of the alleged crime in the other jurisdiction. And in considering that, whether to keep him here in Pennsylvania or send him to New York, again, comparing the seriousness of the crimes, as well as the weight of the evidence that is known to date against the defendant, i.e., does it appear that indeed there's probable cause for the arrest and charging and that there is substantial evidence that the person did it? So what we do have from today's hearing is a review of some of the bits of evidence that were found on Mr. Mangione's person. Really interesting stuff here and some new news, and you may have heard it here first. So we knew yesterday that there was some sort of written three-page manifesto. We knew yesterday there was a ghost gun and a silencer. That was, and we knew yesterday that he was in possession of an ID, a fake ID, that used the same exact name that existed on a different fake ID that he used to check into the hostel where he stayed for 10 days leading up to the murder in New York City. So we knew all of that. Today we got some new information about what was said in the manifesto. And there was basically a line in there where I am sorry or I apologize for the strife and trauma this may cause, but these parasites had to pay. That being released into the media today, and again, discussed during the extradition hearing today. He was asked, do you have drug or mental health problems? By the judge, he answered, no. That, mark this down, that he answered no today in the extradition hearing, because I am going to tell you what I think, in addition to arguing about the Terry stop, I think the defense is going to have to make some kind of argument surrounding mental health. And I'll give you some thoughts about the sort of tack that I think they're going to take in this eventual murder trial. So mark that down. He told the judge today, I have no drug or mental health problems. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Prosecutors, again, arguing both for extradition and that he should be held in custody without bail, i.e. not released. Also, we found out today that when he was detained and ultimately arrested, he had $8,000 in U.S. cash, $2,000 in foreign currency. He had his actual passport on him as well. And here's where it gets really interesting. He had with him what is called a Faraday bag. Now, if you've never heard about this, you can go down a huge rabbit hole about what these are and who uses them. But a Faraday bag is basically something that you can put any electronic device in, read a cell phone, that will prevent the cell phone from being geolocated, from tracking the phone. So it is used by diplomats and intelligence people and law enforcement, like your buddy from down the street that you see at the gym. Yeah, like regular folk ain't walking around with like a Faraday bag. That's just weird. And so very interestingly, the prosecutors today in this extradition hearing and the bail hearing made the argument that all of these facts, all of the things that he was found with, indicate a level of criminal sophistication, quote unquote, criminal sophistication. That was what they alleged. And very interesting enough, he responded in this hearing today saying, I don't know about criminal sophistication. He also claimed he did not know where this money had come from. And he claimed that this Faraday bag, he didn't even really understand that it was about blocking the geolocation possibilities that get emitted from a cell phone. I just thought it was a waterproof bag. That was what he was trying to sell to the court. I don't know about y'all, but I'm finding that a little bit hard to believe when the guy is a two-degree holding engineer from an Ivy League school. I mean, come on, man. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. This is going to be a doozy of a case, y'all. Peg from Windsor, what's your thought this afternoon?
Peg, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. Hello. I'm calling about this killing of this United CEO, and I'm in the medical profession, and I have very negative feelings about insurance companies in general, and I think every single person has had a horrible experience. I'm in the middle of one right now. And you're waiting months and months and months to get a procedure done, to get a PT, to get an MRI. And people are recording things incorrectly in your chart. And you get a summary and say, I didn't say that. Yeah. And it is like, this is the opening of a can of worms, which we've all been wanting to do, because these HMO and insurance companies have been taking us to the laundry and taking our money, and Medicare doesn't know what's going on, I don't think.
Yeah, there's so much there, Peg. I've had claims denied after very traumatic injuries. I've had friends have to navigate the Badger Care field. I have friends laid off trying to get Cobra. I mean, everyone I know has a nightmare story about dealing with a health insurance company. And here's the thing, when I've had these experiences, right? Like, I'm a lawyer, I'm an economist, I know how to read fine print. And the amount of time that I had to dedicate to try to resolve the what I thought was wrong claim denials was like having a second full-time job. I also, anytime I talk to people about this, and again, this isn't legal advice. I can't give anybody legal advice on the radio, but you have to take like copious detailed notes. What's your name? Do you have an ID number? When did I talk to him? What time of day? Because they seem to forget. The insurers lose the information, all of this kind of stuff. But here's the rub. I would have very little sympathy for someone who has all of the privileges that wealthy, incredibly well-connected Ivy League people have when we don't extend the benefit of the doubt or the understanding of the frustration level to most regular folks who don't have any of those advantages, who commit crimes. In fact, crimes of much less severity. We have a tendency to throw the book at regular folks, and I'm really curious here how this is all going to transpire. And here's the tease, y'all. The defense attorneys for this young man are going to lean hard into some argument about his mental health. So that's why him saying today in this hearing, I don't have any drug issues, I don't have a mental health problem, is going to be a big deal. I think that's going to be their first natural tack. Now, maybe he directs his lawyers, I don't want you to make that argument, I don't have a mental health issue. But I think they're going to try to connect something about his level of pain, his frustration, extreme emotional disturbance, that kind of stuff. Folks, if you want to get your 2 cents in, a nickel, dime, or a quarter's worth, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Kat from Middleton, you are very patient, my friend. What do you got for us? Cardi, you might have to let her know that she's
Kat, on you're here. On the line.
This is Karen.
Sorry about that, Karen. You're on the line.
Okay. Hi, Maggie. You know what? When I first heard this story, I had the feeling that he was a hired, they were going to just wipe him off and get him out of the country, kind of like a whistleblower type thing. But I also feel like he was meant to do this because Advantage Plans, and I'm not sure if that's what, you know, United, whatever it is, the CEO from that, they carry those. But they are the wet dream for the Republicans, for all of us, Advantage Plans, and they suck. Because I sold Medicare supplements for Physicians Mutual, which is amazing if anybody has it, and I'm blessed, but I'm paying for it, you know. So it's like, I feel like this kid is the voice of so many of us. And if I had a child that was intelligent enough to do something like that, hell no, I wouldn't turn him in. I'd be kissing his feet.
Karen, so much there. First of all, to answer your question, yes, United Healthcare is a huge purveyor of Medicare Advantage plan. What is Medicare Advantage? If you don't know the terminology here, y'all, it's privatized Medicare. Huge, huge moneymaker for insurance companies. This is potentially why the shell casing said things like deny, defend, and depose. In other words, deny the claim, defend the lawsuit, and depose the insured to try to, again, perpetuate the denial of coverage. Thank you so much, Karen. Cardi, I can hear you on the air. Barbara from Madison, are you there?
Yeah, I am, Maggie. Hi.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment that he's not going to get... I mean, I don't condone what he did, but I think he's really making everybody aware. These insurance companies are ripping us off right and left, and the government is backing these Advantage. It isn't even Medicare. It's a fake, and it screws over people. So, I mean, I don't condone what he did, but in a way, he's almost a modern-day Robin Hood, you know?
I think that's the way some people are portraying this. And so the other question I have about how he's going to be defended is, do the lawyers effectively try to angle in on some sort of jury nullification like he might have done it, but acquit him anyways? So much more to discuss. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. This great conversation continues on the other side. If you're on the lines, stay there. You will be next. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Do you turn your best friend in? Question of the day, y'all. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
What's up, y'all? It is the last segment of the day. So this is the last shot, although I'm sure this topic ain't going anywhere fast, to get in your views about Mr. Luigi Mangiano. Would you have turned in your friend or family member? Do you think this guy's a modern-day Robin Hood, or is he a cold-blooded assassin, a guy that came from basically the highest level of privileges in this world, rich family, Ivy League education, had a job, Mr. Popular, got all the girls, was in a frat, huge network of friends and connections, political access. So why in the hell would we call that rich kid Robin Hood? He killed someone in cold blood. Or is our anger as Americans over this broken healthcare system feeling some sort of weird expression in what this guy did? And if we do find ourselves excusing him in some weird way, do we provide that same level of understanding to everyday people who do things that they never would have done otherwise because of similar financial extreme pressures, the failures of the system? Because I don't know that we do, y'all. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And to that point exactly, someone texting in from the 414 says this: I can't believe you all are justifying this. You people are real trash. A modern day Robin Hood? Are you out of your damn mind? Well, I invite you, caller, to call in and say it to me in your own words. Joe from Madison, it's your turn now. Do you turn in your best friend or your kid if they did this or you thought they did?
It's very interesting. There were a large group of people who were very helpful to the FBI in locating some of the January 6th participants by analyzing computer images, and they really proved invaluable in terms of turning people in. They looked to these same people to help find this this person who killed a United Healthcare man, and people said uniformly, "No, thank you. I'm real busy. Gotta wash my hair. No time." I think the animosity that exists with good reason toward the insurance companies is the story here. And it's interesting, you were speaking of, this is not a man from poor circumstances. However, right. He is somebody that has something that I think a lot of people can understand, which is he did his first day surfing when he was in Hawaii. He was taking a break. And yes, he comes from great privilege, great wealth. He's also very smart, many degrees. But he took his first day surfing and he suffered a back injury. And this back injury was apparently so painful that he was unable to have sex. He could not be physically intimate with other people because he was just in such horrific pain. Pain changes things. It's being sick and being unable to get insurance. That's all awful and terrible. But pain is a whole nother realm, I think. And there's a reason why there's a huge opioid industry. At any rate, I don't know, what I would do in that circumstance. What I do know is that this particular incident has created, it's just like Yellowstone just blew up. I mean, I can't believe it. It's not only in the patient side, it's also on the doctor's side.
Yeah, it's I know I have a number of friends who are doctors. They freaking hate insurance companies too. They are endlessly frustrated by it. They are endlessly frustrated by coverage denials when they know their patients need care. I had dinner with a bunch of my friends that work in healthcare when Anthem Blue Cross was still saying they're going to basically meter the amount of anesthesia you can get. And my doctor friend was like, "That's literally insane." Here's my question to all of you. I mean, fundamentally, at the end of the day, if this rich kid who had all of the resources in the world and could have bought any surgical procedure out of pocket, let's just say, if he was so desperate that he's killing somebody, he's assassinating someone, planning this out in detail, etching the shell casings, what the hell does that, where does that leave the rest of us, these everyday people, me and you? That's what is so, like, the desperation here from someone with so much, with all of the levers of access and power and money. And this guy was driven to the point of no return, wrote a manifesto. My gosh, what are the rest of us expected to do? Andrew from Sun Prairie, do you turn in your son or your best friend?
Yes. Yes. We've been told for all of our lives that murder is wrong. And this was murder. There's nothing you can say about that. Do insurance companies take advantage of people? Yes. We've been talking about insurance companies and changing the healthcare system for now going on 30 plus years, and we see no action. Our elected officials are still not taking action and helping the American people. So we're by the political system as well as these big corporations who are pumping money into the political system to screw us.
Well said, Andrew. Here's what I have to say about this, y'all. I would turn them in. And here's why. We are at such a dangerous point in our country. Do we slip into the abyss? We cannot allow vigilantism to take root. It was a crime, and he should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And we must take a deep look into ourselves and demand more of our politicians and our healthcare system. Money isn't speech. Corporations aren't people. The billionaire cabinet has got to go. I want a fair middle wage. I want taxes that work for the middle class and a healthcare system that works for each and every one of you. I'm Maggie Dawn. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. Dom Salvia, up next with a little overtime.
Come on, come on now. It doesn't matter if you go stack up. It doesn't matter if you go drag up. You should have had some more. I'm telling everyone, most every taxi, come on, that you crack up.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.